Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fan Tide Podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am entertainment journalist, editor, author, rest times two, Trevell Anderson.
And I am trash. I'm trash.
Well, I could have told you that.
I've been effective for very little today. Jarrett Hill. Coming up on the show, we are getting into a what was that episode, getting into some of your letters and your questions, and we're going to jump right in there. Trevell was making the face with the red lip like you wanted to say something as I was talking. What?
I was just going to say, you've already told the internet, so I feel like I can say this. As you all know, we record on Tuesdays. Jarrett and I met yesterday on Monday to do some book stuff. And we were together from 12 noon. I arrived at noon 02.
Noon 010, but okay.
Noon 02. It might have taken me 8 minutes to walk up, you know, your godforsaken steps. You know, I got to traverse all the way to the back corner. Anyway.
It's funny because you have to walk past the elevator to the stairs, but go on.
Yeah, but I was on the phone. Anyway, so we were there together for 8 hours. I didn't leave till 8 p.m., okay?
We had lunch and dinner.
Yes, and did not do nothing. Not nary a thing on that book at all. Did a lot of other stuff, don't get me wrong, but that was not the reason why we met.
Listen.
And so you were also trash yesterday is the long and short of it all.
Oh, wait, is that where that was? I did not realize that that was all a buildup for that. Fuck you too.
Woo! Bam, bam.
That wasn't even a stray. Actually, it was direct. Like it felt like a stray that I didn't see coming, bitch. And I'm like, oh god, damn.
Ooh, I gotta keep you guessing. Keep you on your toes.
Well, fuck you very much. Thank you so much for that. Let's get into these letters. You want to get into this first one?
We have a letter here from one of our wonderful Fanti fam members, Candace. This is in response to, I believe, last week's episode, maybe episode before last week. We had a tough question from a listener about the usage of HOTEP. A white listener, I should say, about the usage of HOTEP when describing HOTEPery. And Candace has written...
Can I say before we get into this letter?
Okay.
Before we get into this letter, something I respect about us is our willingness to be like, girl, I don't know. Like, I have respect for people who can just be like, look, girl, I don't know. Right? Because this is a hard one, but go ahead.
Well, the question was about whether, like, how does one describe HOTEPery as a white person without perhaps using the word HOTEP? Anyway, Candace sent us a letter to tell us about a corner that she didn't know existed, but am not surprised about, she says. She said, I was looking for a weird-shaped bookshelf and some gay stickers. And Etsy seems to be using the word HOTEP with no issue. We're talking about the little, you know, the little hippy-dippy, you know, independent provider.
Let me stop you right here. The sentence alone, I'm looking for a weird-shaped bookshelf and some gay stickers, and Etsy seems to be using the word HOTEP with no issue. There's a lot happening in that one sentence that I have so many follow-up questions about. Actually, Candace, I will see you in Atlanta this weekend, so I will ask the follow-up questions, but I think that's hilarious.
Well, she says, Etsy seems to be using the word HOTEP with no issue, which, like y'all said on the show, HOTEP is a bit nuanced just to be thrown out there like an SEO keyword. So whomst is searching for, quote-unquote, HOTEP art, because we know that HOTEPs don't call themselves that. Smiley face, and I have never searched that term a day in my life. Lord, where is the gatekeeping when you need it? So then she sent along some photos of this HOTEP art, okay? And so she says, I almost hit send just now, and then I thought, well, what do they consider HOTEP art? She sends us a photo.
Yes, for the investigation.
Absolutely. She sends us a screenshot. And what they consider Hotep art is just African art. African art is considered Hotep art by Etsy's SEO. One white man who actually does understand the nuance of the word is one thing, Candace says. But Etsy? And then she inserted a gif of, there was a gif there of Smokey in Friday. I think that was his name, Smokey, right? In Friday. Chris Tucker.
So one, I'm just fascinated by this question, first of all, right? Because I'm always intrigued by how did this happen kind of thing. And I think the question is an interesting one because if it came from Etsy, it does feel a little weird without any more information, right? Because it feels like some white folks doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it came from like user-generated content, right, where black artists are like, honey, these Hotep niggas love this type of shit. So, right, and like put Hotep is the keyword or whatever, then it seems like, oh, okay, this was smart business by some black folks using this platform, using language that white people might not even recognize.
Unless, of course, those black people are Hoteps themselves and they're not trying to dupe, you know, the Hoteps into buying their African art and they are trying to market to their fellow man or fellow woman.
Listen, if I'm Dr. Umar,
I can't.
And I'm selling my, you know, I hate black women t-shirts on Etsy,
I can't.
I'm going to probably put one of the keywords as Hotep in there because when your friend goes to buy like a Hotep shirt.
But they don't call themselves Hotep.
Right. But I know that people call us Hotep.
Oh, God.
Right. Like, I know that there is a brand that is established.
So you're reclaiming it.
Exactly. It is a reclamation of Hotepery, which, I mean, it's not intended to be a book plug, but, like, in the book, we have this conversation around how, like, the reclamation of language. Yes, we do. And how that is something that you see common in marginalized communities, right? The reclamation of bitch by women, the reclamation of nigga by black people, the reclamation of fag and other language from, like, queer and trans people. Like, yeah.
Oh, I love faggot. Oh, I do.
Oh, I mean,
I do.
It's
F-A-G-U-E-T-T-E.
Okay. Again. Oh, that used to be the name of the group chat that we had the whole show about. It's, yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated by, like, the ways that language gets reclaimed. I'm not exactly sure that that's happening here with Etsy, but we'll see.
Well, now I need a listener to go to. We got the Etsy investigation. Now we need the eBay investigation. What is eBay? What's happening over on eBay? What's happening over on, you know, Craigslist? You know, I want to know what's going on Facebook Marketplace.
Candace, follow up with us. Let us know what's happening over on the eBay and the Facebook Marketplace and on the Craigslist because we need, like, thorough investigation. That is a joke. I'm not asking for that. Want to shout out to Laura Swisher, producer and comedian. Faget, French black person getting bread? Question mark. Okay. Nice work, Swish. Okay. We have an Instagram note here that's coming up, but we're going to take a break.
What are you
first.
Doing? We got to go to break.
I recognize I have messed up and I was pivoting, bitch. Okay. I'm a professional. All right. You want me to do what I was going to do?
Are you?
I'm going to do what I was going to do.
Real professionals don't mess up.
We have a DM here on Instagram that I'm actually not supposed to be reading. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll see whatever this is. Fantasy's coming right back. You see how professional that was, bitch?
That wasn't professional. We heard the pause. I heard the pause in your voice and you were like, oh, I heard
but
the pause.
They would
pause
not
said,
have
oh,
known
I
that.
Up.
Laura, go to break. Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. I can tell you that I have been in a pretty significant depression cloud for probably about over a month now. And it has been really, really challenging for me to get my brain to kind of move back into like problem solving and execution mode when you're faced with challenges in life. But when you learn how to find your own solutions, there's no better feeling. And I can tell you, I've been back in therapy for 5-ish weeks now, and it has really, really been improving the questions that I'm asking myself and the ways that I'm able to tackle how I'm feeling from day to day. A therapist can help you become a better problem solver, making it easier to accomplish your goals no matter how big or small. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, accessible, affordable, and entirely online. Get matched with a therapist after filling out a brief survey and switch therapists at any time. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/fantie today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/fantie.
If you are anything like me, you have always wondered about that thing. When they talk about with the sheets, they talk about a high thread count, okay? And they say that you want a high thread count, right? So that the sheets, you know, supposed to be really nice or whatever. Okay, well, did you know that a high thread count doesn't always mean high quality sheets?
Say what?
Bigger is not always better when it is time for bed, okay? This is what the people over at Brooklinen want you to know, okay? Because it's time that you treat yourself. High-quality materials are the most important element of a good sheet, not the thread count. The Brooklinen team uses single-ply yarns from long-staple cotton, which creates soft, strong fabric and a true thread count, while most manufacturers use weaker, multi-ply yarns to inflate their thread count and give the illusion of luxury quality. No illusions here, honey, okay? This is the real, real. Brooklinen offers cozy towels and robes, loungewear, accessories, and so much more. And if you need the extra nudge, check the over 100,000 five-star reviews. So refresh your rest today with Brooklinen's best-in-class bedding. Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code FANTIE to get $20 off plus free shipping on your purchase of $100 or more. That's brooklinen.com and enter promo code FANTIE for $20 off plus free shipping on your purchase today.
Welcome back to FANTIE. We are in the midst of a what was said conversation. There's a tweet, Instagram DM that I'm not supposed to read because Travelle told me not to.
That was a lot.
I honored that. Mm-hmm. Go ahead on.
Yes. You are not supposed to read it. I know you read it, but that's all right. That's okay.
I did not. I swear.
It is a DM from an individual named Lovey. From a few months ago, they say, thank you, Jared, for sharing your story about your academic journey on the show for years. I regret it not being able to finish my degree at Tuskegee.
Yes.
That's what we do at Morehouse for Tuskegee. I regretted not being able to finish my degree at Tuskegee. It was a point of shame even now. Even though now I am doing better financially in my current career than had I would have finished my degree in psychology, I feel a lot better.
Come on.
Hearing your testimony, smiley face. This show means so much. Please keep up the awesome work. You guys are the best. 4 thumbs up. Aww. Now, is that 4 thumbs up out of 5 or 4 out of 4? Just want to know what the range of possibilities are.
I love the, like, all of that love just to be like, but do you really love us, though? Like, how much do you love us?
Exactly. Do you love us?
Exactly. Lovey, thank you for that. I've started hearing from more people, it seems, and I'm always, like, encouraged to hear from y'all that it is helpful to hear about how things are happening for me, for us. Thank you. That makes it feel worth it. So thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
And you know, if either one of y'all ever want to borrow my little piece of paper, I am happy to hand it over.
Borrow your piece of paper?
Okay. Yeah, my little thing, my little degree. It's right up there.
I hate you so much. Wait, which one?
Can you see who that is? Wait, there we go.
I've never heard of that school. What is it called?
Oh, it is called the Leland Stanford Junior University.
Oh, she sounds cute. Is she like a little boutique college?
No. She's known in the streets as simply Stanford, in case, you know, Palo Alto, you know. Ivy League of the West, they say.
Stanford. F-E-D. Okay, I'll look it up. I'm excited to check it out.
Yes, Stanford. Okay. Stanford.
We got a DM on Twitter responding to our Oscars episode that says, as a black femme, the two examples I've seen recently in the public space of defending us is Will Smith and Cory Booker. Personally, I take Will telling you, quote, to keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth over you loved a country that didn't love you. Will's response is imperfect, but I haven't seen perfection or a close proximity illustrated. Therefore, what are other options that Black femmes can choose from to present to our masculine partners as acceptable responses to disrespect? What a question.
So this is, we should say, right, this is in response to our Oscar, Will Smith, Oscars, I think we called it the Oscars slapped episode, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit of a conversation from a moment ago, earlier this year. And the writer is referencing Will Smith slapping Chris Rock, right? And then also the commentary by one Cory Booker.
In reference.
But this gets at the conversation we were having, right, about what does respect look like? What should it look like? What does it look like in public? Go ahead.
Well, I mean, we should say Cory Booker was in response to disrespect from the Senate confirmation hearing of now Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. One, I think Cory responded in the way that he should have in the setting that he was in.
How could they disrespect a person like her who's done everything right in her life and in her journey? How? How qualified do you have to be, double Harvard? How qualified do you have to be clerking at all levels of the federal judiciary? How qualified do you have to be?
Well, different conversation. When it comes to, like, what are other options that Black femmes can choose from to present to our masculine partners as acceptable responses to disrespect? That actually makes me think about the ways that we talk about Black protests always being a problem, right? So, like, I remember if we think about it in progressive order, like, if we're kneeling, we're doing it wrong. If we're standing, we're doing it wrong. If we're marching, we're doing it wrong. If we're walking, we're doing it wrong. If we're running in the streets, we're doing it wrong. If we're, like, no matter what it is that we're doing, protest is never going to be received by the person you're protesting well, right? And so, like, I don't think you have to find other ways to respond to disrespect. I think people have to be more respectful. I don't know that that is a helpful answer necessary. I mean, I don't know that it is as helpful an answer, but, like, I don't know that, like, women and femmes have to find other ways to respond, so much as people need to start being able to accept those responses for what they are.
Okay, sure, but that's not the question at hand, right? And it also isn't the reality, right? The reality is that disrespect is going to come to all of us, femme or not, right? And
but that is the question. She says, what are other options? And I don't think it's like a matter of, like, you should respond this way, you should respond that way. I think, like, that kind of feels like victim blaming and, like, and telling the folks, like, oh, don't engage or whatever.
This person, because I don't know what, you know, pronouns they use, but this person isn't saying what options are there for Black femmes. They're asking what options are there for their masculine partners. And their masculine partner's response to the disrespect that the femme is experiencing is how I read it.
So
at
I just
least.
Waxed all that poetic for nothing.
Well, that's because you misunderstood it, but that ain't got nothing to do with me, love. But I love you nonetheless.
Wow. First of all, the attacks.
But there is something to what you said, though.
That makes sense.
Yeah, there's definitely something to what you said about, like, just reframing, like, what the issue is at play, right? I think that's useful, you know, for framing and whatnot. Yeah. But, like, I don't think that's what this person's asking. And I don't have no answer.
Kind of back to the Cory Booker point, though. Like, I think Cory Booker responded in a way that was appropriate for where he was. And I don't know that it's always, if there's, like, an answer that is solid of, like, respond this way, so much as we should probably be talking about how to think about it differently. right? Like in class, I always say to the students, like, I'm not as concerned about you doing everything exactly right every time, but I am concerned that you're thinking about it in a way that is smart, right? That you're thinking about it in a way that shows that you are going about it in a certain way, that you're not necessarily, yeah, you messed this one up, but you were thinking about it the right way. And I think that maybe we have to give that to these masculine partners that we're talking to, right? Like, I don't need you to like jump in front of me. We've heard women say before, women and femmes say, like, I don't need you to always jump in front of me to defend me. And like some women and femmes do want to be defended. And I think a conversation about that is something that is probably more important than like actual, behavioral responses to give.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the writer is saying that, like, from their vantage point, they see that in this moment, right, that we were talking about months ago at this point, those were like the two extremes, if you will, of what hashtag support Black women, protect Black women looks like, right? One physical, the other one, was a verbal, acknowledgement and honoring and supportation in the face of in the face of what, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson was like facing throughout that confirmation hearing, right? And what I hear in this letter is, if those are my two options, smack that motherfucker every time. because this person is saying that they did not respond well to Cory Booker's, you love the country that didn't love you. That's what I'm getting from this whatchamacallit. And in terms of like what other options there are, I mean, I would say this. I think we all need to have conversations with ourselves, with our partners, with our friends, with our family members about like, how do you want me to show up for you? Period. How do you want me to show up for you? Right? Like, for example, you and I have had conversations about like when I get misgendered in public with you, right? How to go about, handling and addressing if need be. And whatnot, right? Like, we got to have those conversations. And so, to me, I think, like, we all know how we, what feels like respect for us, what feels like holding a person accountable for disrespect to us. We should be communicating that to the people around us, is what I would say. So, it's not about what options there are to choose from, right? It's about, what do you want? Is how I'm seeing it. I don't know.
Yeah. No. Swish, if you could, go back to like the last 15 seconds of what I said and insert that here.
But that's not what you said.
Okay, I just want to say that was what I said.
That's not what you said.
Moving on, though, great letter from Joanna.
Do I need to put Candace on this investigation too? Sydney. Candace, we got another investigation for you, sis, okay? Because that ain't what he said. Now, you might have said it.
I said, like, we need to be thinking about rather than, like, actual tools, we should be really kind of thinking about how we think about
it. Those are two different answers.
Right?
Those are two different answers.
Because even if we use it, hold on. Hey,
those are two different answers.
It's okay. You're okay.
Those are two different answers.
No, but, like, even you use the example of, like, how we are when it's out, when I'm out with you, right? And, like, okay, well, how do we handle someone misgendering you, or how, and like that, but that's always a conversation, right? It's not like there's not a hard and fast rule all the time. Right. And so it's like, that is a thing that needs to always, be a part of the conversation. Like, okay, well, how are you feeling, or what it is? Because in this situation, the person who wrote this letter, they are a person that is like you, that's like, whoop that trick. Whereas,
hold on, I'm a lover, not a fighter. Hold on,
Laura, can you go back and grab the clip of Travell saying,
"That's not what I said."
Slap that hoe.
That is, can you put it in right here? I mean, I did say it, but the context around it. Okay,
I just want to point out
he trying to Fox News me on my own podcast.
Listen, I just want to talk about the facts, okay? And I want to be fair, and I want to be balanced. Anyhow, let's get to this letter from Joanna from Sydney. It still trips to me that people are listening.
We love Joe.
World. Joanna says, thank you for sharing where you're at with your mental health in the most recent episode, Keep My Name In Your Mouth. Oh, yes. The episode with Michael Chin, where we discussed biopics. You weren't here for that.
I listened. It was great. It was a really good episode, friend, because I listened.
It was a really good episode. I'm currently on my way to a session with a psychologist funded by my workplace, and I'm feeling my familiar sense of nausea, which for me is a sign of anxiety. But let me tell you, I did not realize initially nausea was part of my mental health situation. So I'm with you that noticing what's going on is very powerful and helpful with moving forward. I've been depressed since I was a small child. One of my first memories is of wishing I was dead, and I didn't realize that was odd until I was much older. So I was so familiar with that rhythm in my life, I thought I knew what happens to me. First of all, that's intense. I'm pausing the letter, by the way. I didn't take a detour in the letter. But like, just the understanding that you were depressed since you were a small child, I have been back in therapy, but I remember my last like stretch of therapy that I think was like about a year with my therapist. That's where I came out realizing like, oh, my depression, I think, does date back to when I was a kid. And I remember having to like suppress being queer, being gay, and like, but not knowing what I was suppressing or what it was called. And so like that dating back to childhood piece, that resonates for me. Back to the letter. Joe says, but then I started having panic attacks. And at first I didn't know what they were either, because I thought you needed to hyperventilate for it to be a panic attack. Whereas I go from sweaty and nauseated straight to blacking out and falling on the floor. I, of course, worried something was deeply wrong with my brain or body, but not with my mental health. With help, I came to understand and recognize what was going on and started to respond better with it. And things got better. But I've still been doing the work and have a lot of work left to do. Now that I'm dealing with a new wave, I'm beginning to realize how many occasions in my past were actually anxiety moments or episodes that I didn't recognize at the time because I didn't have the awareness or the language to name and witness what was happening. Now that I do have that language, I'm developing that awareness. I'm more able to step out of my reactions and able to say to myself, hey, you're about to descend into a flood of tears thanks to a really bad management moment at work where someone above you dealt badly with the situation. You don't have to do that. You don't have to take that on and feel the weight of that. You can channel your inner Travel and say, I don't give a fuck, and move on.
Well, I mean, I say what I say.
I love that. So she goes on and makes some recommendations that I'm going to put into the show notes. Dr. Nicola Perez, How to Do the Work. She says it's been helpful on that journey. She's a very aware of the difficulty for many in accessing therapy and speaks to the language for BIPOC in particular with experiencing the burden of trauma on the daily. So I'm sure she'd be a helpful resource for many. All that said, Joe, I really appreciate this letter. One of the things you said in here that also kind of spoke to me was like the panic attack and it not looking like you expected it to. I remember having a job where I was a producer on the radio and our host was having a panic attack while live on the air. And in the, like, this was a call-in show, right? Where like a caller calls in with a question and the person gives them feedback, right? And like the person is like listening to the question and turns to me and turns off the microphone and says, so I'm having a panic attack right now and I need you to go get me a water and like get me a like while listening to the person saying like my life is falling apart and this thing is happening. And I was like, okay. And I walk out and like to see someone having a panic attack, but like being able to breathe through it and talk through it and still be live on the air, like it made me recognize like, oh, this shows up differently for different folks, right? Like, and so I think it's really important for folks to be able to have the context of like, oh, these things actually can show up in a lot of different ways. Maybe I should be thinking about what those patterns are and what it feels like and what it sounds like. And so, yeah, I really appreciate that. So thank you, Joe.
Mm-hmm. I don't got nothing to add. Let y'all do what y'all do. But shout out to Joe. I love Joe because, you know, Joe be calling in no matter whenever we do the Fanti Live salon. She calls in from Sydney and we love to see her face.
Cut to Joe being like, I ain't doing it this time.
Cut to her now in the future. Anyway, shout out to Joe. And then last but not least, we have a DM here from the Twitter from Hannah. Hi, I love your show. I only started listening a couple months ago, so I've been going back through the archives, and I just listened to your episode about the N-word. I am white. When Jared said that he doesn't think it's okay for a white person to even read the N-word aloud, it made me think of the only time I've ever said that N-word. During the first semester of my MFA program for poetry, a visiting poet, POC, but not black as far as I know, gave a master class in poetry writing. I went to the class, and at one point we read aloud a poem about the history of racial violence, specifically the slave trade. This poem had the N-word in it. Each person read a stanza and then passed it to the person on their right. And my turn, can we talk about all of that popcorn reading we had to do in school? Now, why would you put people on blast like that? Everybody don't got good reading comprehension skills. And now you got Bobby struggling through onomatopoeia. Like, that's so cruel.
Okay, so I say this with the love of Beyonce atop a glittered horse. You just jarred the fuck out of me with that detour because I was like really immersed in this story.
I'm sorry. I just had a quick aside because, you know, this person, Hannah, is telling us that they were put on the spot in this poetry class and everybody had to read. Now, before I get to her particular issue about the N-word, I just wanted to note that I need teachers to stop putting people on the spot like that because that don't work for everybody. Everybody ain't got that. You know, you be embarrassing people. Of course, you may not intend it, but you embarrassing people. Because they've only ever said certain words in their head to themselves. You ever be reading something, Jared? Because, you know, we do the teleprompter stuff, okay? You ever be reading something and you come across a word that you have only ever said to yourself, okay? You've never seen it spelt out, okay? So you know the word, but you don't know, you just know how you say it.
This is the entire experience of writing historically black phrases, though, right? Like, oh, bitch, I've never had to write that. Like, you know, like, I don't know how you spell that.
It's a mess.
How do you spell the pronouncer of that? Like, it's absolutely really difficult, especially when you see it coming and you are not prepared for it.
Okay. Yes. Sorry.
So go ahead on and say what I love the suspense of what happened with Hannah here. What happened with Hannah?
Sorry. Back to Hannah. Okay. The poem that they had to read in class had the N-word in it. Each person read a stanza and then passed it to the next person on their right. And my turn to read landed on the stanza with the N-word. There were black students in the class, and I was praying they would get that stanza, but God did not hear my prayers. When it got to me, I froze at that word. The guest poet told me to say it. I didn't want to make the black people in the class uncomfortable, and I didn't want to say the word, but I also have a hard time disobeying authority. So I said it quietly and moved on. Jared, you are falling over.
You know me well enough. I'm always thinking in television. If I'm the producer filming this, I need a tight shot on Hannah. Get it now. Stay with her. Like, I want to know. Because, like, she's going to see what she has. I want to see the reaction that she has when she sees that she has to get it, that she has to say it. I want to see it all happen. Hannah, I'm sorry. I say that with love. I'm sorry that this happened to you, but I'm fascinated right now.
Hannah continues, I think about this instance often, and based on the other things we talked about in that class, my assumption is that the guest poet wanted us to literally experience the violence of racism in that room. Perhaps he wanted to make me uncomfortable in my whiteness and to reckon with my relationship with racism, but I still wonder how the black people in the room felt and whether it was worth it. I guess I'm writing because I want to know your thoughts about the guest poet's choice and my choice to listen to him. If it happened again, I think I would speak up and say that I am uncomfortable saying this word, but you never know until you're in the moment. I wonder specifically about Jared's thoughts on this since he is an educator. Ooh, you're an educator now, friend. Look at you. Ooh. Hannah asks, is this bad pedagogy? If you have white students And if you wanted them to reckon with their whiteness on a visceral level, what would you do? Come on, Abbott Elementary.
Well, so it's interesting that you say that, because the important piece of this to me is early in this letter, Hannah says, during the first semester of my MFA program for poetry, right? Like, these are not fifth graders, right? These are like people here studying poetry.
Young adults.
They are grown adults who are like, have signed up for this.
Yes.
In that case, I feel differently than I do if this were children. Right? If it were children, okay. I think I could see parents having some issues around that, which kind of feels like some bullshit, but I also kind of get, but that's not what we're talking about. In this scenario, I feel like if the instructor is this person who is doing this and is asking for read it, like if that's something that you're comfortable doing, if you're not comfortable with it, say, I'm not comfortable saying that. Right? Which then makes all white people like, oh, I'm comfortable saying it. Like, then, you know, then that becomes a whole other thing, right? But, like, I think you can say you're not comfortable. Or if you're like, I'm going to participate in the activity, I'm going to say it and do it. I recently had a situation in class where we were discussing privilege. And I had the students talk about, like, what intersections of privilege they have, right? And I have cishet white men in my class. And, like, we had to talk about what that means, what privilege looks like for them as opposed to, you know, the Black woman sitting next to them. And as we discussed it, as he was discussing what happened or how he sees his intersections of privilege, the Black woman sitting next to him said, like, she raised her hand. And, like, I could tell she wanted to interrupt him. And I was like, just let him finish, let him, you know, and I wanted him to pull out what he was saying. And so then when I came to her, she was like, well, I want to respond to what he said. And I was like, no, what we're doing is talking about our intersections of privilege, right? We're talking about where we find privilege in our lives. And so she was like, okay. So then she explained where hers were, and they were from a very different lens than they were for him. Right? His was about things he didn't have access to, and hers were about existing. Right? His were about, like, well, I didn't have things that other kids had, and was really kind of talking about, like, being underprivileged or coming from, like, a poorer family. And for her, it was about being a woman and being Black and being, you know, all in the various different intersections that she named. And she was frustrated with him because she was like, your intersections she wanted to say something about his intersections. And so later on in class, after we had all kind of discussed what ours were and different parts about privilege, then I came back to her and I said, okay, well, what did you want to say to him? And she said, and like, then we had a discussion around it, right? And it was great for them to be able to have that kind of engagement about it, but to also hear each other and to be able to get all of what they were trying to say out. And I think you can do that with MFA students and have difficult conversations with them when you're at that age, in a different way than you can at Abbott Elementary, right? With children or with young people who are still, you know, in a different kind of space that are doing more general education. And so when I see this situation, I think about, like, the intention of the conversation that y'all are trying to have and everything that y'all are trying to do. If you feel comfortable doing it, say it. I don't think it's bad pedagogy, but I recognize that it is something uncomfortable and could definitely, you know, piss some people off.
Okay, let me get to the root. I feel like there's a root for me, in this question, and it is, let's say you are teaching about, I don't know, but it involves a white person saying potentially nigga, or as they are often sometimes more prone to, nigger.
I hate you.
Is that what? Because, you know, sometimes, you know, don't the yo-yo-yos.
Just let it go.
I'm just saying.
Yo-yo-yo.
You know, sometimes the yo-yo-yos say that there's a distinction between the two. Listen, where I'm from, there's no distinction for white people. Whether you got an A on the end or ER, you about to get this work, okay?
And you can be Post Malone or you can be David Duke. It ain't nobody using it.
Listen, it don't matter.
Period.
Okay? But, okay, what I'm saying is, like, if you're reading something in your class and the white student says the N-word in the course of reading, you know, Kendrick Lamar lyrics, for example, is that a problem to you as a professor in your class?
It's actually something that if somehow it came up and, like, I wasn't expecting it, I would want to see how the room responded to it and have a conversation about it, right? So, like, we've had all these conversations about reboots and how shows are getting pulled off of things because they had the thing in them and blah, blah, blah. I feel like we just talked about this maybe within the last month, but, like, to me, like, the ignoring it or trying to say we're not going to say that word in this class, that doesn't really do us the service of, like, discussing this issue, right? Like, or how does this work in this classroom, right? And, like, if it was the first time.
But hold on, yes, plus one to everything you saying, but I want to know, like, when you call me, to detail what happened in the class, what you gonna say?
The voice note goes like this. This is the voice note. Bitch, today in class, baby, white girl had to read the word nigga, and baby, she said it. Woo! I'm gonna call you. That's the voice note.
That's what I thought. That's right? What I thought. That's
because
what
now we have to talk about what happened.
Absolutely.
That's what we have to talk about. But, like, I think it's a great opportunity to have a conversation about it. Like, I think, Hannah, you say it or you don't say it. I think, like, it is a choice to make, but it's also a conversation to have. And so, like, I know that it's really, really uncomfortable, but I would also offer that, like, the poet that came in with that sentence knew that that word was in there, right? I would imagine.
Absolutely.
And so, like, I would imagine that, like, this was part of the conversation that they were intending to have. And, like, I'm always wanting to have that conversation in class.
I do think that the fact that the poet is not black is interesting. It's an interesting wrinkle in this conversation,
yeah, it is.
For me. But I agree with you that, like, you know, I'm sure there was some sort of intention, right, behind mm-hmm. this poet choosing this poem with that word in it, for sure. But okay, thank you, Hanniger.
All that said, we want to know what y'all think. We've talked about a lot. Let us know on the social media. You can hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at FansHivePodcast. You can also use the hashtag FansHiveFam and we'll jump in and chat with y'all. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we've got dishonorable mentions. That's next.
Oh my gosh, hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture trivia podcast, Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play games like motivational speeches. It goes a little like this. Riley, give us an improvised motivational speech on why people should listen and subscribe to Troubled Waters.
I look around this ad and I see a lot of potential to listen to comedians such as Jackie Johnson and Josh Gondelman, and they need you to get out there and listen to them attempt to figure out sound rebus clues or determine if something is a Game of Thrones character or a city in Wales.
I have chills. I'm going to give you 15 points. All that and so much more on Troubled Waters. Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you choose to listen to podcasts.
You're in a theater, the lights go down. You're about to get swept up by the characters and all their little details and interpersonal dramas. You look at them and think, that person is so obviously in love with their best friend. Wait, am I in love with my best friend? That character's mom is so overbearing. Why doesn't she just stand up to her? Oh God, do I need to stand up to my own mother? If you've ever recognized yourself in a movie, then join me, Jordan Cruciola, for the podcast Feeling Seen. We've talked to author Susan Orlean on realizing her own marriage was falling apart after watching Adaptation, an adaptation of her own work, and comedian Hari Kondabolu on why Harold and Kumar was a depressingly important movie for Southeast Asians. So join me every Thursday for the Feeling Seen podcast here on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Fans High. Now it is time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or for their stupid. Travelle, you want to go first or you want me to go?
I'll go. I just have one. I just want to shout out this feature, this cover feature that was done in T Magazine, which is the New York Times' Style magazine or whatever, I don't know. But it's this feature titled, What Does It Mean to Be a Young Black Queer Artist Right Now? It is a gathering of a handful, the photos is a gathering of like, it looks like 10, 15, 20 black queer artists. Artists is broadly defined. It has Saeed Jones. It has Jeremy O. Harris. It has Texas Isaiah is in it as well. A variety of folks. Michael R. Jackson, I believe, is in it as well. Denez, I think that's how you say his name. Denez. Anyway, the poet. But it's this really interesting conversation and interview that Emil Wilbekin, the legendary Vibe magazine editor, he kind of conducted the interview with these folks in this really interesting kind of exploration of that question. What does it mean to be a young black queer artist right now? The entire kind of conceit for the project and the photos and the video was done by Shakith, who is a visual artist that many of you might be familiar with, some of his photography in particular. And it was really interesting kind of collection of voices and interesting to hear kind of their thoughts on that particular question. So I wanted to shout that out. We'll put a link in the show notes.
I want to give a dishonorable mention to the state of Virginia. This headline comes from the New York Times and says, Virginia reverses school protections for transgender students. The journalist here is Ava Sassani, and the first sentence here really kind of puts it in great context, saying, quote, in a move that could further inflame the debate over how to handle transgender rights in schools, Virginia will no longer allow students to use facilities marked for the gender they identify with and will mandate that they file legal documents if they wish to be called by different pronouns. So Travel has talked about this here on the show. We've talked about it in various different ways over the years. We've had conversations around Don't Say Gay and all of these different things. And I just want to highlight this because I think it is... this happened like kind of out of nowhere. Even the folks that I've talked to about this were like, this kind of popped up, right? And like these things are happening in places all over the country, and I think we need to just be aware that these things are happening, because like I haven't really even heard a whole bunch of conversation around this happening. I also want to acknowledge the James Earl Jones Theater in New York. This is an honorable mention, not a dishonorable mention, I should say. Journalist Michael Paulson writes, this afternoon, this was on September 12th, the James Earl Jones Theater was dedicated on Broadway. It's a Schubert Org Theater on West 48th Street and 110-year-old playhouse formerly known as the Court Theater. And it's just undergone a $47 million restoration and expansion. So congratulations to James Earl Jones, who, I mean, James Earl Jones is about as iconic an actor as you can possibly be. And like iconic a voice more than anything. Yes.
I got a question. Is he still with us?
Yes, he's still alive.
Okay, he's still among the living. All right. Okay.
I did look it up to be sure, but yes.
Okay. You just had to ask.
As of the time of this recording.
Well, hold on. I know he was, yes. You know, he.
He's 91 years old.
I'm going to say, because I know he up there, honey. I know he up there. Okay. Yeah. James Earl Jones is iconic, legendary, but listen, plenty of iconic and legendary people dead, and we...
It's like, girl, we've been through a lot.
Listen.
We've been through a lot.
A lot of people have left us over the last couple yeah. years. No shade. That's it for you?
No. Lastly, I just want to mention this because I could really do a whole show on it, but I'm not going to give y'all a word today. But this story that we saw about Ron DeSantis transporting immigrants out of the state and dropping them off in Martha's
and
Vineyard.
Greg Abbott
and Ron DeSantis, and the ways that we are seeing this starting to happen. Mm-hmm. I think this is as fanti an issue for me personally as it can possibly be. And I'll tell you why. I told you I'm not going
to
preach.
I'm about to say you better tease that out.
Republicans are doing this. And it is for the most disgusting, racist, overtly problematic ways, right? And like, and I've been writing a piece that I'm probably going to publish at some point about this, because if you read the language, they're surgical about what they're doing in their language, right? And you know what they're doing. The flip side of this coin is this is probably actually better for the immigrants that they are moving, because they're going to be in communities that will probably have resources that will be able to help them. And so it's a very challenging thing for me to sit with, because they're doing something that can have a decent outcome for incredibly racist, incredibly problematic, and like incredibly political and specific reasons that you can never support. And so I'm struggling with this situation because it's horrendous, but also hoping that the people, when they get to the places that they are, that they will encounter people that are willing to help them because they are in a state that is more progressive and more welcoming to their communities.
Well, so I just want to be clear. This is also an opportunity for me to plug, you know, What a Day is a daily news podcast that I co-host. Okay. I'm on there at least three times a week on Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays. It's called What a Day. Available wherever you are streaming this very here sound right now.
Stan Fant. I just want to make sure.
But I just wanted to note on that story, right, the issue with this story specifically is that they are lying to these immigrants.
Yes.
Okay. And sending them to these places that some of them don't even know where they're going. And while this has been something that these two governments in particular have done before, normally they notify, right, resource providing entities on the other end to meet these people, right? But in these most current situations with the Martha's Vineyard situation that you're mentioning, as well as I believe it was Greg Abbott governor of Texas, who sent a bus of migrants to the neighborhood near Vice President Kamala Harris's home, they are no longer notifying or telling people, so that these migrants, some of whom do not speak English, who don't have families and communities in these cities that they're going to, they're just dropping these people off, right? And like, there's something very different about that. And while in the course of the Martha's Vineyard situation, the community rallied together, they got students from the local high mm-hmm. school who are studying AP Spanish to what's that word? To translate stuff. They put beds together in churches and stuff like that. So yes, while the community, you know, has rallied around to support these people, let's be clear, right, that despite whatever potential positive impact can come out of this, right, that does not excuse, right, this like horrible xenophobic, otherwise problematic behavior on behalf of these motherfuckers. I just wanted to say
and
that.
And plus, even to that point, I think what's really awful about it is like, this is something that these white people can do and message to other white people. As like, oh, but look at what happened. She said that she was so happy that she was in Martha's Vineyard, right? And this is a way to do some racist bullshit and get white people to be able to support it. There are white people who are going to see this and be like, oh, right? Like, huh, well, it doesn't seem like it was so bad. I mean, I wish you would have called ahead, but I mean, it seems like it worked out for those people, right? And like, and ignore the ugliness and the racist xenophobia, all of the things that we've already explained. Anyway, we're in the middle of honorable mentions, but like, that whole story has just really, really been irking me. So it is now time for
Black History is happening every day. Today's Black History honor is going to a legend and an icon. You know, she's having a moment right now. And in honor of her, Jared, I would like to bless you with a selection, if you don't mind.
I do.
Is that all right?
It's okay.
You'll be okay. It's all right. I asked for your consent, but I didn't really want it or need it.
I was going
to do it anyway.
I'm just going to take my AirPods out, and when you're done, I'll see when you stop.
I just wanted to borrow a little selection, okay, from Sheryl Lee Ralph's speech. You know, she said, I am an endangered species, but I sing No victim song. Shirley Ralph won at the Emmys a week ago. As y'all know, we pre-recorded last week's episode.
Wait.
What?
You can do better than that. I expected more.
Well, you see what had happened was I had this whole plan that you would open the episode. And then when I say, and I'm an endangered species, that's what I was going to do. But then you wanted me to start the episode. So then I had to pivot, you know, because I'm a supportive team player, you know, and I support you, friend. Support me, bitch. And so...
that's why it got put here.
Anyway, okay, we pre-recorded last week's episodes. That happened before the Emmys. I just wanted to take some time to note and give Shirley Ralph her flowers. She became the second Black actress to win an Emmy for supporting actress in a comedy for her role in Abbott Elementary. We all know and love, okay, Shirley Ralph, one of the original Dream Girls. And a part two to this is that the first Black woman to win in that category, the first and only prior to Shirley Ralph, was Jack A. Harry, okay, in 1987 for the show 227. So shout out to them.
Really quickly, so I tweeted years ago about for a long time holding a grudge against Shirley Ralph after Sister Act 2. And like, I was mad for Rita. I was mad. And so I tweeted about it, never thinking that she was going to see it. And like, she responded. She was like, but we got that together, right? And I was like, yes, ma'am, absolutely. And I always was like, oh my God, if I ever saw her. And then her son, Etienne, does What Good LA. And like, I met her in person and she sold me my yoga mat because she was there supporting her son's like project. And I was like, I told her about the tweet moment and we laughed about it. It was great. So shout out to Shirley Ralph. Like, what a fantastic moment for her that like flooded the timeline. And we're a little late getting to it, but we wanted to make sure that we
absolutely
did.
That's it.
Oh, okay.
Let's go home.
Well, the doors of the church are open. You ain't got to go home, but you are listening on Apple Podcasts or any of the platforms that allow you to rate, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Let us know what you think about the show.
And tell your people.
And make sure to share
People to listen.
Absolutely. Let them know what episodes you love or why you're pissed at me for what I said or whatever it is. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can hit us up at FansHypePodcast on Instagram and Twitter. Use the hashtag FansHypeFam. Or if you want to send us an email, do that with I talk for a living, I promise. Send us an email to FansHype@MaximumFun.org.
If you'd like to become a financially contributing member of the Fanti fam, you can join us at MaximumFun.org/join. If you do that, you will get access to the Fanti Friday Live Salon. By listening to this now, you've already missed the one for this month. So if you go ahead and become a member now, you can get you can be ready for the next time. And you know what they say, if you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready. In the name of Jesus, our music is brought to you by the one and only Corice. That's Core.ece, wherever you get Slayworthy audio. Corice had a fabulous show with Cameron Forbes here in LA at the Hotel Cafe this past week. Shout out to him. Our graphics, as always, are done by Ashley Wynn and the folks over at Moon House Creative. And we are edited by Nihar Patel.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fanti, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I'm a fucking professional, unlike my co-host, Jarrett Hill.
And I am an endangered species. But I sing no victim
Okay. We got the point.
I should be on Broadway. Give me my Tony now.